You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Power Play. I'm Matt from Tennessee.
I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Matt from Tennessee. How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, actually. Since the last time I've been on, we've bought a house and moved in. I'm actually talking to you now from my own private sanctuary.
Oh, you're
I gotta get me a private sanctuary. I really do. That sounds great.
Your
the
own
upstairs
course.
Loft of our detached garage. It's really quite nice.
Really? Oh, nice. There we go. I'm still down here in the dungeon. Last time we had you was for Ensign Row.
Yes.
Okay. So what have you been up to in the last month or two? Or three?
He's bought a house.
Besides that.
Other than that, no, pretty much status quo. Work is still going good. And we're on the downhill side of the summer now, starting to get a little chillier, my daughter's back in school. It's a new school since we've moved, so she's adjusting pretty well.
That's cool. Doc, what about you?
Things have been completely crazy. Started a new school year, of course, just only recently. We're obviously all anticipating Discovery coming on in but a few days' time. Work is keeping me far too busy. This is a lot of stuff pulling in lots of directions. But hey, it's nearly Christmas, so that's something to look forward to.
There we go. Did I miss the Orville?
You did. Yes.
Yes, there's been 3 episodes already.
Damn.
Here's something I got really not frustrated about, because, you know, there are worse things in the world going on. But this hasn't been picked up in the UK. I can't find anyone in the UK that is showing it. And, you know, not even the, you know, half-rate dodgy channels on, you know, up in the up at the back end of your Sky subscription. There's just there's nothing showing the Orville. I don't think Netflix has it. So it's been a big pain to get to. The best I've managed to find so far is one of these, picture-in-picture kind of like dodgy YouTube feeds that people have, which, you know, it's not obviously not the greatest way to watch anything.
Well, I keep forgetting about it. I think it's on Fox, right, Matt?
It is on Fox on Thursday night. I watch it on Hulu is where I'm finding it.
Holy moly, wait a minute here. Yeah. Hulu Prime? Or, no, Hulu whatever it's called? Did you have to pay for it?
Yeah, it is a paid subscription. I think we only pay like $5 a month for it or something like that. So.
No, we get it. We subscribe to it, but I didn't know it was on there. Because I can use Play On to download it. All right.
I tell you, it's an exciting time between the Orville and the new Star Trek that's coming on in 2 days as of this recording. It's a good day. It's a good time for science fiction right now.
Yeah, I do want to see that Orville. It looks funny. Discovery... I just saw another preview for it for today, and it just, I don't know.
Don't, stay away, stay away.
It's from you?
No, you have to stay away from the previews, right? Because I think, I'm going into this Trek, probably more blind than I've gone into any Trek except for Enterprise, because I kind of fell out of love for a couple of years, and I just didn't see Enterprise coming. I don't think they broadcasted it on TV or terrestrial TV here in the UK, so it was hard to get a hold of as well. But I really have no real knowledge of what's coming up here, and I think that's a good way to go in. I mean, I'm certainly not going to go out of my way to spoil myself with only like 2 days left or however long it is. And actually, I would prefer to be able to binge watch it, to be honest, because one of the I don't know if I've ever told my Enterprise story, and maybe I'll just quickly go through it now, but I caught up with Enterprise as it happened to be on TV. I was at my parent-in-law's house and just flicking through the channels, and there was the scene from what I now know is In a Mirror Darkly, but it was obviously fourth season Enterprise, and they had the scene which I looked at because I knew that it was First Contact. So they've got this reenactment of First Contact going on, and the first ever piece of Enterprise that I saw was when they recreate the First Contact landing, and they have Zephyrin Cochrane there, and they have the guy that shoots down the Vulcan and then goes and boards the ship. And I thought, wow, I probably should be watching this. And I think I watched part one then, and it was like the following day I headed out, bought the DVDs at the time, and I just did a massive four-season bender over about a two-week period. And I would like to do the same to Discovery, but of course you have to trade off the fact that you want to have it sooner rather than later, but there's obviously you can't consume the entire series in one go. But there we are. Anyway, I'm certainly not going to spoil myself ahead of time. I've been out of the loop for so long, it's not actually going to cause me too much pain to go into this pretty much blind.
Yeah, Brian wants to do a review of Discovery. I'm like, I just don't know when I can.
Well, when we can. When we finish TNG and then DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, and the original series. It gets in line, right?
No, I think he wants to do it with me. I don't know if he... You might
look,
be...
You should, listen, if because it's on streaming. It's on streaming, right, in the US? Not just in the UK. It's being streamed. It's actually a very natural kind of format to have it as a live watch along, right?
Yeah,
there's no ad breaks, or at least, I mean, that's how it works in the UK, and you can pick it up whenever you like, just synchronize yourself, and then why not just do a live a live show,
right?
each time you choose to progress along the episodes.
Yeah,
no editing.
I don't know about it.
No note taking.
Yeah, no, because you never know if I have to work and then I'll miss one. I don't know. I don't like doing live.
You don't miss it on streaming, right? You just don't do it. You do it another day.
Right. That's what we'll have to do. But okay, so I'm on Hulu. There's three of them available. So that was probably one from yesterday's number four, right?
Yeah. No, from yesterday is number three.
Number three. So there's three available. See, now, like I said, I'm gonna actually download it from Play On. Put it on my network, and tonight I'm going to watch it upstairs while I'm in bed.
Well, the previews make it out to be a comedy, but the actual show, it's really more of a drama, especially episode...
I'm not listening. I don't listen to that. No. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, hopefully you're done saying that.
I'm not spoiling it for you. I just want to let you know.
Is it really? I thought it was
It reminds me of like the original Star Trek. They tackle heavy issues. I was surprised. It's a drama with comedic elements to it. I really like the format that they have. And anyone listening, yeah, especially episode three up to this point, they're not shying away from controversy.
I thought it was the complete Galaxy Quest.
The commercials make it out to be that way, but it's really not. It's actually really smart.
Okay. I mean, Seth MacFarlane in a serious role. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, well then, whenever you're ready, go ahead and kick off.
All right. The synopsis for tonight's show is alien entities take over the minds of Data, Troy, and Miles O'Brien. This is the 15th episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was originally released on February 24th, 1992, written by Paul Rubin and Maurice Hurley, with teleplay by Rene Balser, Herbert Wright, and Brandon Braga. It is directed by David Livingston, and the guest stars include Rosalind Chow as Keiko O'Brien, Cole Meany as Miles O'Brien, Michelle Forbes as Roll Aaron, Ryan Reed as Transporter Technician, Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer, and, oh, it's the Tedeschi twins as Molly O'Brien.
Nitpick on that. Go on.
So, what did we think of tonight's episode?
I don't know. What do you think?
I'm going to jump in first here.
I can't wait for this one.
Have at it.
Lou, you seriously have an issue with this episode? This episode's great. I don't understand. You know, you emailed earlier on in the week and said, oh, you know, we'll be able to do it very quickly. There's not much going on. A bit of a snooze fest. You're wrong. You're really wrong. I like this episode. I think it's... I remember actually watching this specifically. You know, I've mentioned in the past that I originally watched... TNG on its kind of like original run in the UK, which was probably about 3 years later than the date that was just being given for the original air date. I remember watching this one specifically, you know, it's probably when I was growing up, 14, 15 or so. I thought it was a decent week-to-week adventure. I remember watching this. I watched, Cause and Effect that's been nearby. I remember watching Schisms as well, because they used to show it kind of daily, so you used to be able to kind of binge on it. And this is, you know, got a very strong recollection of this from my childhood. And, you know, rewatching it, I think it's perfectly fine and it holds up. And it's a, you know, yeah, it's not kind of the tentpole show of the season, but not everything can be. I'm going to try to bat away this negativity here.
Okay.
And isn't Keiko great? Keiko's always great.
Not much to do there, except for whine and complain and don't hurt my baby. This almost hits just about every cliche known to Star Trek. Number one, it's too easy to take over the ship. You can get away with things. Number one. Number two... Didn't anybody on the bridge think, hey, why don't we cut out Miles O'Brien's access codes? I don't know. Maybe Data, too. And why not take out Troy's as well? But yet, they could do too much. All they need to be is taken possessed by somebody, and they can just get away with too much. But I assume that if I go crazy someday, they could take my badge access out of the computer like that. That's my thing. It's the whole, I've been possessed by bad, evil. It's just so cliche-ish anymore.
I mean, was it cliche back then? Obviously I was a child when I first watched this, and you know, this is going back a long time. But I don't, you know, I remember watching this and really being excited. And, okay, you mentioned how easy it was for them to take over the stuff, but... You know, remember, I'm coming from the point of view of, I think Data's the greatest thing in the world, and it's really Data that's going for it here. Mm-hmm. And the way that he turns, I mean, I fully believe that Data, and it's been shown before, right? If Data turns, for whatever reason, whether it's, when Dr. Soon activates his human device, or when he gets possessed or whatever, he takes over the ship. That's what he can do. So I'm, I really have a soft spot for this. And now you're going to tell me that you don't even like the fact that when they go evil, they've got evil accents and they behave evil in an uber villain kind of way.
It's kind of like Bashir when he gets taken over and he talks
this is a million miles away from that episode. The passenger, right, in season one?
Yeah.
This,
I mean, that episode is bad. This one's... this one's good.
It's kind of the same, almost. But no, you're right. Brent Spiner really is awesome when you watch his facial expression. I mean, he really gets into not being Data in this one.
Well, if nothing else, right, this episode, it looked like it was fun for the actors. Mm-hmm. They got to do something they don't normally get to do and have expressions and talk in ways they don't normally get to. So if nothing else, it was fun for them.
Well, except for Marina cracked her ass in this one.
Her famous story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you not know the story, Doc?
I understand that she did her own stunts, right? And she hurt herself at the beginning. And I also seem to remember that she kind of volunteered for this, for artistic purity. And in the end, you couldn't even tell that it was her that was flinging backwards. But I didn't know how much... I mean, I don't know how much damage she did.
She fractured her coccyx.
Okay. Well, that's... well, I mean, good. She's actually got a good performance this week, right? Or am I got like rose tinted glasses on here?
Again, you know, it just
I fully accept that, you know, they get infected by evil. The people that are evil for the sake of being evil. And I do admit that when they like leave, there was a part of me that thought, you know, is damning anyone for eternity really a realistic punishment? Maybe we should have had a more intelligent discussion here about penal systems. But, you know, on another week, that would have been a great thing to do. But this week, I thought that the action was good enough. I thought that the ghost story was good enough. And in the end, I was just happy to, you know, to swallow this.
Okay. Matt, what about you? What's your Cliff Notes version of this?
Oh, I don't really have any notes written down right now, so I think we should just get into the episode and we'll talk about it as we go.
Okay, let's see. So the ship has come across a distress signal from another ship that disappeared over 2 centuries ago. Well, that's cool. Tell Starfleet we found the Essex, or have we? I mean, somebody's down there, and they're alive.
So I do find it deeply ironic that despite the fact that I think I tried to big up Troy, and that she's actually a good character that was just badly written for, I do fully accept here that if Troy was just ignored, no issues would have come up, and really it's all her fault, right?
Mm-hmm.
In every single way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you guys catch the name of the planet?
Let me see.
It was finally called Naboo. I thought for sure the captain's log was going to start with something about escorting people to for trade negotiations for the blockade.
Yeah, apparently a Mabu 6 didn't note that.
An N-class moon of Mabu 6.
Oh, what is it? Mabu with an M?
With an M, apparently. Yeah. According to Memory Alpha.
I missed it. I thought they said Naboo, like in the Star Wars movie.
Oh, that's why I don't know the reference. Okay.
So, Luke, have you never seen Star Wars?
No. Well, the original 70s version, yes. Return of the Jedi, yes. All these new things, I've seen 2 of them.
Yeah, that's pretty fair.
Yeah. All right. It was a bad joke. We'll move past. Never mind.
Okay. So, we can't beam down. We just can't beam down no matter what we try. So let's just take a shuttle. And we all know how that's going to go, right?
You'd think they would have tried send a probe.
Yeah.
Why are we sending a manned craft down there first thing? Let's see if we can get an automated thing down there first.
Mm-hmm. But at least they got down there. I mean, they crash landed. I just heard somebody go offline.
Yeah, I think it was James.
James is gone. He'll be back soon. So, they crash-landed. Might have busted up the ship or something.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, he is like totally gone.
Yeah, he fell off the grid. Where'd he go?
Oh, that London power grid is terrible. Let's see if I can get him back.
So the Essex was a Daedalus class ship. I just happen to have a model of which right here with me.
Oh, nice. Daedalus. Isn't that the ship that takes the kids up into space?
No, Daedalus was from Space Cowboys.
Oh, that's right. Daedalus was the... Daedalus. Wait a second. Was it? Was that the ship? The shuttle they went on?
Right. Yeah. Daedalus was the name of the shuttle on Space Cowboys. The one from Space Camp was the Atlantis. But this is the Daedalus class.
Hmm. Oh, cool. Big ball for the saucer. Oh, poor James. Yeah. Poor James.
No. Hello, I'm back. I don't know if you guys have missed me, but I just came back with about 10 seconds ago, so.
Oh, okay. He was showing us this Daedalus class ship.
Yep. That would be the Essex.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Actually, I always liked that one, and also it reminds, I suppose it goes into the Pascal, right, in All Good Things.
Right.
It's a very similar kind of philosophically the same design with the big ball.
Okay.
Well, it was the original design proposal for the Enterprise before they went with what they actually went with.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Wow. I keep hearing myself echo. Okay. So, anyway, like I said, we're on a shuttlecraft mission, and you know how that's going to end. And sure enough, it does. They crash land. Riker gets his arm broken. And while they're there, they could see life forms coming out.
No. Okay, a couple of things before this. We've mentioned it before. How on earth is this shuttle? I hope that they stop using this particular one in the future because it's just ludicrously small, as always. Standard complaint. It's just silly. How do they not kill themselves on this? I mean, I don't quite get... The inertial dampness must be working really well because... As you kind of cut away, it's 360 in, and I would assume, considering that when Yar was on the shuttle that plowed into a sandy part of the planet, they lost the pilot, right?
Yes.
I have no idea how all of these guys survived.
Beats me.
Yeah, you lose helm control, and that thing has all the aerodynamic properties of a brick.
But I suppose the out here that they have is that the moon probably has a very low gravitational field, so you just smoothly drive down it. You might hit the moon, crash land at 5 miles an hour or something like that.
But still, it looks like it did hit a rock when it fell. So
No, I know. And even at 5 miles an hour, a rock hitting your head's not a good thing.
No.
Plus, that was enough to break his arm.
Yeah, it was enough to break his arm. Okay, so can I talk about the life forms that they could see coming toward them in the storm? We need to get out of here now. And what is their solution? Have O'Brien beam down.
Yeah, this part I don't understand. Because O'Brien's making his pitch to the captain saying, I can do this, I know how to get through it. He's not the ones at the controls.
Oh, no. How? Again, this is more cliche stuff. How could that possibly be? Why can't O'Brien do it for the three of them. Beam them down.
Well, hang on. Isn't beaming down must be harder? That must be easier than beaming up, right? I would have thought, because let's say you get things wrong, and you know, at least if you're beaming down, you know what you're starting with. You're starting with the flabby Irishman. You put him into a beam, and you send him down to the down to the planet. Now, if he missed by a couple of feet, worst that will happen is that he'll materialize in midair and then fall to the ground. Whereas, I think if you kind of try to beam up, you have to be able to identify what you're beaming up, and you certainly don't want to like leave a leg behind or anything like that. So I've always thought that beaming down was easier than beaming up, but I don't think they particularly make that clear.
Well, another thing they don't make clear is these pattern enhancers.
What is that? Oh, you've got to love the pattern enhancers.
What's that, a Wi-Fi extender?
That's what I took it as, some sort of like a signal booster.
I don't get it. But it works.
But again, why did O'Brien have to go? Just send down the enhancers.
Yeah.
Why did he even have to? He beamed down 10 feet from the craft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he just. You're right. Send the enhancers down. If it doesn't make it, well, send some more. We'll just keep sending them until we finally get it.
Or you send Ensign Ricky down with him or something. You know, some no name security guy.
Also, at what point do you just beam down a shuttle for them to get into and then drive away?
I don't know. That's, like I say, it's...
The size of the shuttle they came down in surely can be easily... Probably sent down in four boxes and assembled there and then. Mm-hmm. They have data with them.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, beam data down alone. He's not mortal. But anyway, you could tell when they have both fell back that Marina fell on her cock, sis.
But as she puts it, it could have been Worf wearing her uniform and nobody would have known.
Yeah, all right. But they were able to get those enhancers down and beam back and everybody's just fine. What's wrong with you, Data? Oh, sorry, sir.
That was a weird thing. A weird thing that, because he doesn't do it again the entire episode. It's just that one time out of nowhere for some odd reason.
But one thing I noticed is that when he glitched, Riker and Picard react, but Troy and O'Brien just look ahead. I didn't hear anything. Did you? I didn't hear anything. So I thought that was pretty interesting directing. Kind of tipped the hand of Troy and O'Brien, but they don't react. They just stand stoic while you hear Data glitches. And what's wrong with you?
I didn't notice that.
There's another thing I also noticed that I never noticed before and never would have. When they finally get the... And this is later down the road, sorry. But when they finally get the ship into the southern pole region, did you notice how fast the planet is spinning? The ship is staying still while the planet spins up on top of it. So in the time that it takes me to explain that the planet is spinning and why, the southern pole is now on the opposite side of the world. Or am I missing that?
No, I don't know. I didn't notice that either. I'd have to go back and watch it again.
No, but the pole should stay where it is, though. That's the whole point of poles. That's what I just said. That's not entirely true because there are two types of poles, right? You can have the poles in terms of where the magnetic field goes, and then you can have the axis of rotation. And it happens to be the case that for Earth, the axis of rotation and where the magnetic north is are pretty much identical, although they're not identical. I think they're a couple of degrees out from each other. If we are to assume that when he means the polar region, they're not just talking about something. As long as they're talking about it being like the point of which the axis rotates, then it should just stay exactly where it is. And everything else would rotate around it.
Right. So are you watching me now?
Yep, I am. Yep.
Okay, so the Earth rotates like this. Mm-hmm. Whereas this planet seems to rotate like this. And the ship stayed here.
Let me get that up. So what you're saying is that they weren't aligned to the rotational axis.
No, I would imagine...
Actually at the equatorial region, is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, I don't know. If that were on Earth, that would be consistent. Let me just, I've got a picture.
It's at 34 minutes into the episode.
I mean, it's not integral to the plot, but...
No, I know, but, you know, I'm just curious, because this, at least... hold on.
You're right.
No, I don't think I am right after all. I mean, look at that. It could be just clouds.
It could just be cloud. You're right. Yeah. It could be... But then the question is that what actually is causing the cloud, right? So if you do go to the poles, there's not a huge amount of kind of wind coming across the poles because of the way that the Earth rotates. Because as the Earth rotates, there's kind of a bit of give. I mean, it's not fully this, but there's a bit of give between the Earth rotating and the atmosphere not quite keeping up, which kind of gives you the direction of travel of a lot of the major winds. So you wouldn't expect typically for there to be huge blizzards across the poles. But I mean, you know, this is a strange new world, so perhaps something is different. And it's a moon. And actually, the fact that it's a moon might mean that there's just a lot more gravity in play from the planet that would be nearby. So, yeah, I think we're better off if you take into account the extra body of the planet.
Yeah, it must be the clouds. Okay, so they're back on the bridge. It's time to put their plan into motion. What plan? Well, you know, we'll find out. Troy wants to go see Picard. Hey, could you come in here? Let's talk about this. I don't know what was going on. I don't know what I'm feeling. But for some reason, something was calling me to the southern polar region. And I can't explain it. Meanwhile, back on the bridge, Data says, you know, Commander, I was just thinking, I think we'd be a better chance of finding something if we get into the polar region, southern polar region.
So I think this is, there are a couple of things. I like two things about this mainly. I like the fact that there's a lot of pent up frustration with the Troy and the Data and the O'Brien Asterix characters. So the guys at that plane, the criminals at that plane, you can tell that they're very frustrated and that they're making these mistakes and they're jumping ahead too far. And I like that because it's not as if, I mean, first of all, it means that the bad guys are fallible. They're not just these kind of, you know, huge criminal masterminds that aren't going to make a single mistake and are ice cool. So I like the fact that you have that. The other thing I like is that in Data in particular, I think that he is having to restrain himself a lot. You can tell that the way Brent Spiner plays it, in particular when, like, for example, Riker talks back to him, he knows that he has to agree with Riker because Riker's made a logical argument, and he knows that that's part of the character of Data that would do that. But you can tell that Brent Spiner's playing it as, you know, with someone who doesn't want to be doing this and is very frustrated by it. And I think Brent Spiner is very kind of good in these particular scenes. One other thing, of course, is that you do actually have O'Brien like hanging around the bridge. No one turns around at any point and says, O'Brien, aren't you kind of, you know, did you have to go back to your transporter room? It won't clean itself. But he kind of, he hangs around the bridge just looking suspicious.
Even Worf doesn't figure it out. Okay.
So, and Worf doesn't figure out a lot, right? He's happy to sit there and entertain that these are the dead spirits of the Essex crew.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I kind of thought they were too. And the reason why I say it is they knew too much. They knew too much about the Essex, the crew, and everything. But then I thought, well, obviously that's because Data knows everything about it too.
Well, yeah, but even later on when Picard quizzes them about, you know, who was the admiral in charge of whatever, it was Troy who answered it, not Data.
Right, but could he have given her that information? Is there any telepathy in play with these beings? We don't even know who they were or what they looked like or anything. So maybe they were able to convey to each other. Or they came across the Essex and almost got off the planet, but it didn't quite work. But why would they know who the admiral in charge was at the time?
Yeah,
they've done their research.
Yeah, right.
They just did waiting, a lot just, of research. Just waiting for that other Federation ship to come across, and then they could put their plan into action.
Yeah, but Data was a little jumpy. He is a little jumpy, and automatically locks out to a row and changes a course and heads, guess where? The Southern Polar Region. And Riker wants to know, Data, what is going on? And for his trouble, he got a fistful of Data. Get it?
How did he even have a face afterwards?
Yeah. Bam! Yeah. No way. O'Brien takes out Worf and Ro, and then phasers Riker, while Troy double fists Picard. And, you know, I read somewhere yesterday that whole double fist move that Kirk started actually is meaningless. There's no way you could fight that way.
You don't say.
No.
But Kirk did. What are you talking about?
Yeah. He fought the Gorn with that double fist. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, Kirk did it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Lou, you just reminded me there when you're talking about Data kind of like punching Riker. And you know, we are a mere couple of days, as it's already been mentioned, but away from Discovery. And I do seem to remember I made the prediction that, you know, now that we're no longer on network TV and we're in the streaming age, we're going to end up with our first, like, hyper-violent and, you know, a Star Trek with full frontal nudity that I would expect of the, you know, of the 2010s. So let's look forward to the fact that when this type of stunt is pulled in Discovery, yes, Riker will be literally left without a face after, you know, after an android punches straight through him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, hold on. No, he doesn't get him in the face. He gets him in the chest.
Through the chest, then.
Yeah, it would be through the chest. You're absolutely right. He must have really restrained himself. But they're able to get away with it, and they get off the bridge. And where do they head for? Go get a drink. Let's go get a drink, and we'll discuss what we're going to do. But again, at this point, lock out all their access. Well, Data does get locked out a little bit, and he gets really angry and starts beating up his console before he leaves. So, how could the android hit the console and not bust the glass?
He's not hitting it fully, is he?
He can't be.
In the same way he wasn't hitting Riker fully. Actually, one thing I don't... This episode's one of the ones where there's a bit of logic behind we can track people as long as we're tracking their comm badges versus we can track people by life signs versus we can track people by magic. And they've never had an internal consistent front on this. And it is something that whenever there's a particular scene that relies upon, you know, I think they did in DS9 a lot as well, that, it's only the comm badges that get tracked. It takes me slightly out of the episode. Because I know they go back on it and forth and back and forth and back again so many times.
Hey, even Naomi Wildman gets away. Leaves her badge on a doll, doesn't she?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
The episode Once Upon a Time. Mm-hmm. I just watched that one a few days ago, actually. But yeah, it's a Star Trek trope, right? It's one of those... Yeah, depending on what the writers need that day, whether you can track them by life signs or if you need the comm badge. Yeah, it is inconsistent.
Okay. So,
I'm not going to complain. I'm not here to complain today. I'm here to defend.
Good. All right, so, you know, while they're on the move, we see a lot of security flaws. They can't just beam them away into a security cell while they're moving. I don't know why not. I mean, Worf, Wrecker, they wake up after Picard comes out. Wrecker's still breathing, which he shouldn't be. He has several cracked ribs. But while they're in the turbo lift on their way down, there's no way that they could beam them away before they get to 10 forward. Okay, so they can't. That's okay.
Or reroute the turbo lift to some secure area.
Right. No. Well, because I think Data would have been able to stop that again. He's got access inside the turbo lift that can out-access the bridge. Why, I don't know. So let's get to 10 forward, where I have my biggest nitpick.
Let me guess. The baby in the bar.
Yeah, why is there a baby in the bar? It makes no sense they'd have a baby in the bar.
What's wrong with taking a baby to the bar?
It's okay to take a baby to bar as long as she looks Asian. This baby does not look like any future Molly whatsoever.
Really?
You don't think?
I didn't find it noteworthy.
Well, Molly's got a very distinguishable face. You know, the Asian look that this white baby has nothing of. She looks more Irish. But later, she...
Well, actually, hang on. So there is a theory, and I don't know how true this is, and it's one of these theories that people like repeating because it sounds like it might be nice to be true. But there is a theory that goes around that when babies are born, they look more like their dads, so that the dad will inherently take ownership, and then they eventually kind of, you know, grow up and they'll slightly change. So, indeed, it might have been like, you know, a red-haired Irish baby to begin with that only eventually went Asian.
Very dark as she grew up. Yeah.
That might be slightly more controversial, though.
Yeah. No, but, obviously it was very clear. I just have to wonder if they really intended to bring Molly back ever. I mean, I don't remember.
You would have to have
Why? Brought her.
Because what's your alternative? Have a baby and then have a baby die in the family and then basically write off both Keiko and Miles for the next 15 years to be, you know, sitting around in grief. They can't have that storyline over one of their main characters.
No, it's kind of like, well, I always assume, you know, they had a nice little storyline, they got married, she had a baby, okay, we'll go on with something else. And it's kind of like Jennifer in Back to the Future Part 2. In Back to the Future Part 1, they put her in the car, and boy, do they wish they hadn't done that, because she was completely useless for Part 2. So what did they do?
Sure, and I'm not suggesting they get stranded on a 7-year series with a baby in the shuttle. Yeah. You know, obviously, you can't write yourself into that corner.
Oh, I would watch that.
Not Molly. But, I don't know, I had the impression... Well, I mean, then again, you know, the way kids grow up with Star Trek. She's a baby today. She's 4 tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Pretty soon she'll be in school with Alexander. And
Yes. The Naomi effect. Okay.
But yeah, when they walk in, this baby is crying.
Yeah.
I was like, if I was in 10 forward, I'd be like, you know, maybe take the baby back to your quarters. You know, it's kind of trying to enjoy myself here. You know, the crying baby thing. I don't know.
I haven't had a day off for 3 weeks. I finally get one day off to come listen to come get my Sumerian sunset made in the traditional style. And hey, what happens? You bring this screaming baby in. Okay. All right, so they're able to stop all the force fields. They're able to stop anyone from beaming them out. They get in. They get their hostages. And now we have to figure out a way to stop them. Okay, so there's another life form in them called amnionic. Ananonic. Ananonic or something like that?
No, I don't remember the pronunciation.
Well, either way, amniotic or something, it sounded familiar, and I don't really know why. Anionic, or I'm trying to find it. But they're going to stop him with the plasma shock. They just need to get all three of them in this little circle. Oh, but before we go there, Picard decides to take the place of the hostages. Let the injured crew go, and I'll come down and I'll be your hostage. What do you think of the plan that they have? I mean, it seemed like they all knew what they were going to do.
Even before that, we have the shootout.
Oh, in 10 forward?
Yeah, we got... How many hits did they take? I think each one of them took 2 or 3 hits and didn't phase them one bit.
No. But everybody else dropped like a bag of rocks. I mean, there were people falling all over the place after getting shot. Yeah. Ouch. So, anyway. Yeah, you're right. I mean, they hit Data with the phaser and he just kind of licks down like... And goes after just about everybody. I mean, Troy's just shooting the hell out of everybody. They're all falling on tables and everything. It's kind of cool, actually. It was a pretty good phaser fight.
Oh, that was the other trope that I saw, was the guy running across who gets hit and falls over a table.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why are you running across this room like that?
I mean, it looked like they were just shooting everybody. Just shut them all up. Worf gets phasered
twice.
Which
was Riker's plan?
What's that?
It was Riker's plan later on. He said, let's just go in there and shoot everybody.
Yeah. Well, that was obviously not going to work.
But also, they didn't really use that often, even when it would be, you know, a good thing, right? So they've got this idea about, a wide beam, but also at the same time, there are many occasions where they've ended up in these phaser fights where they've got this small beam that's just missing the enemy. Think, well, if there's a wider version, if there's like a 4-foot wide beam, why do you even go for aiming at a shooting practice on the holodeck? Just have the 4-foot wide beam.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a bit of collateral damage, sure, but, you know, when you're coming up against the Borg, I'd rather have a 4-foot wide beam to take down the Borg.
Boom. Done. They can't all adapt at the same time, can they?
Well, you'll take them all out at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You'd, as long as they're standing next to each other like abreast, then you can take out like a whole battalion.
Oh, yeah. Just get a Tommy gun.
Well, that would be just crazy.
Yes, no one ever do that.
Well, my defense of that would be that possibly when you do widen the beam, it dissipates that much quicker. That would be my only defense that I can come up with.
So maybe like a phaser beam that's like 4 foot wide, but then like 2 foot deep. So you have like a very, very, very harsh beam, but it doesn't go very far at all.
No. Okay, so Picard goes down and decides to take their place, like I said. Get rid of all the injured people, and he goes down to find out that this is Captain Bryce Schumer of the Essex. And she knows everything about the Essex. But one thing he mentions is completely clear. What if it is true? Then they should be acting very different than what they are.
Yeah, but also at the same time, right, if it is true, these are the ghosts of the previous ship that disappeared 200 years ago, I think a lot of people on the Enterprise are going to have to reconsider their life choices. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you know, if you have certainty that you're coming back as a ghost, then you... It's a bit of an eye-opener if you were to, you know, believe that.
Yeah. Well, here's another question. Why are these beings on this planet as entities anyway?
Well, so I think the entire story here, which is that this is a prison for a particular, you know, particular kind of alien race, and these guys are, you know, we don't get an... We're not told, right, what crime they've committed. You know, for all we know, they were just like late paying their phone bill or something. And then after 200 years or whatever it is of being, you know, abused in the shower, you're going to get a little bit ratty. So I don't know. Maybe we don't really hear much about the we don't hear much about the penal system here. It's just used as a way of having this, you know, pseudo ghost story that might potentially be something more interesting in the sense of it might be the captain of the Essex, but in the end we can reveal actually no, it's just an evil guy. And don't worry about the evil guy and his motivations and what he's doing. And we'll send him back to the prison afterwards, and hopefully we'll put a buoy around the planet telling people not to come near unless they like being possessed.
Yeah.
So it's a bit shallow in that respect.
You're starting to dislike this episode after all?
Nope, because it's a romp at the same time. I mean, you guys have romps, right, in the US?
No.
Don't have a romp? A romp.
It's an adventure.
It's an adventure. It's a good time.
Romp. Especially of a child or animal. Play roughly and energetically. Got it.
Yeah, I'd say that fits.
That fits. Okay. Okay.
Well, I just wanted to comment, too, another one of the security measures. When Worf was talking to the bridge, telling him about the casualties, and then he tries to fit in the hole, and they're not affected by phasers and whatever, I'm kind of disappointed that they don't have some sort of code system. You know?
It wouldn't have mattered.
Probably not, but, you know. But I mean, you know, even security or intelligence agencies nowadays, you know, they would say something like, they've given us food and water, which translates into they are armed and dangerous. You know, there should have been some sort of code that he could have conveyed without letting them know that I've given them this information.
Data would know that. That's why I say it wouldn't have mattered.
That is true. You're right.
Yeah, but...
Never mind.
They've given us food and water. They've beat the crap out of us. They've phased us. Oh, shut up, Klingon! Which is another thing. I love the whole Worf data thing.
Yeah, I think this is a good angle. I always like the fact that Data is like as strong as Worf, despite being like half a foot shorter. And I enjoy their interaction. There is a bit at the end, right, where he says that he apologizes for, having abused him or being on his back. And I think Worf mentions that he was extremely restrained.
Yeah.
Which I kind of, I don't know, I think Worf should be a bit more gracious than that.
There was nothing he could have done. I mean, you know, obviously Data would have killed him easily.
Sure, and let's not pretend this is the first time or the last time, you know, senior members of the crew are going to be possessed by, you know, non-corporeal entities.
Right.
You know, even in the O'Brien family, it's not going to be the last time.
No. Most definitely not. Okay. So, but then again, it would have been a good day for Worf to die. Every day is a good day to die. Now, what's funny is, I don't know if I've told you this, but I got a pretty good camera system around my house. I got like one in the back and one in the front. I'm listening to I don't know if you can hear the dogs barking.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely nothing outside. Oh, wait, I'm wrong. Up the street a little bit, there's a dog walking around the yard. There we go.
Well, this is why you need the dog and not the cameras, because clearly the dog was way ahead of you there.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I had to turn them on to find out what was going on. So, anyway. LaForge and Ro try to hook up this, like, interesting phaser-like thing that will incapacitate all three of them. But they need to be in... They have to be in this little bitty circle. And the weird thing is, they all were. They were all there. She could have just, boom, hit it. But no. They have to talk back and forth to each other. Okay, I'm ready to do it. Okay, I'm only going to be able to get one shot at this. Okay, Commander, we're ready to go. Okay, well, go ahead and go when you're ready to go. All right, we're ready to go. Okay, you ready? Drop the force field. Drop the force field. Drop the force field. Too late. Data already moved out of the circle.
Yeah, that was frustrating for me, too. You know, this is the plan, because I think didn't Crusher have to... like inject somebody into the room too in order to make this field work. Yeah, it seemed like it all should have been worked out. So as soon as they were in the circle, all Ro had to do was say, "Now."
Right.
You know, everybody do what they're supposed to do right now. And
clearly Data was walking out of the circle before they hit it. So it'd have been like, wait, just a second. Hold on, let's try it again. Okay, yeah. So it didn't work. The only thing they got is Picard has a crushed larynx from it. Well, at least he should have. Where's Picard's bruises around his neck? Where's that crushed larynx of his?
This is the thing. I kind of feel like if these guys are as bad as they like are claiming they are, they probably would have killed some hostages. And Picard does push them pretty far, and I'm surprised they didn't kill Picard at that point. I mean, as one of them is trying to he's got him by the neck, and the other guys are incapacitated. There seems to be far too much of a good game, gentleman agreement between how you're going to play out this charade of I'm going to try to escape and you're going to try to stop me. But for people that are actually, facing eternal doom for themselves and all of their friends back home in prison, it seems like there's not a huge amount of urgency on their side.
No. But that's when she finally tells him the story of we just want rest. We just want to be buried and have somebody say something nice about us and then we'll just go to our grave. I didn't buy any of that whatsoever. Oh, no, I take that back. I think back then I did. I probably did. But first we have to go to the Southern Pole region.
Can we go back real quick just to the turbo lifts, or not the turbo lifts? I'm sorry, the Jeffries tubes with LaForge and Ro up there trying to maneuver around each other in these tight spaces. It seems to me that if I was designing a ship, I probably wouldn't put the gravity plating in the Jeffries tubes. Seems like zero G would be the place, would be what you'd want in that area for maneuverability.
To float down the tube?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Those gratings look like they're hard on the knees.
Oh, yeah. I would say they are.
Because they have mentioned, right, that they did have a zero-gravity gymnasium or something has been mentioned. Didn't they have a low-gravity gymnasium or something like that in the pilot? So it suggests that you can have different gravities. And there's even that sweet spot, which never made sense in my mind, where they had where they do have the shift in gravity. So you're right. Well, it depends on how the artificial gravity works, of course. But if it is like, effectively paint, you can paint on to make something be subjected to gravity, then no reason at all to have it in the Jeffrey tube. Yeah, or in the shower, for that matter.
No, you kind of want the water falling in that instance.
You just don't want to hover around it.
Turn it on and turn it off. Get in, turn it off, and then wash yourself, and then get out, and then turn it on and have it wash away.
Have you guys seen The Passenger?
Not the Deep Space Nine episode that we were talking about before.
No, the movie The Passengers. Passengers. Yes. No. Have you seen that?
I have not seen it, but I've heard it talked about.
I think it bombed in the movie theaters, but I didn't think it was all that bad. I mean, they have this whole ship of people in... what's it called?
It's like a...
Mars?
It's like a sleeper ship, where they're all in suspended animation.
That's it, cryogenic sleeper suspended animation. They're all there, and they're supposed to come out of it when they get to this planet, which is in another galaxy far, far away or something. And one guy accidentally wakes up early, and now he's got to try and figure out what the hell to do, since he still has hundreds of years to go. And he ends up waking up another woman just so he has some company. And it's interesting, the reason why I bring it up is you said something about the shower. What would it be like to be in the shower if there was no gravity? And they actually have a swimming pool in there on that ship. And there is a point at which the gravity does stop. And it's a pretty cool effect what they do with that whole big pool of water.
Yeah, I think I saw that in the preview, actually. Yeah, where she's in the water and struggling trying to get out of it. But since there's no gravity, there's no up, there's no direction exactly. to go in the water.
There you go. Yes, exactly. Okay, so Picard decides to play his hand. And he's going to give them free access to Gargo Bay 4. Which, again, I think Data should have figured that one out. If we go to Cargo Bay 4, they can blow the hatch and blow us all out.
Well, I guess this goes counter to my complaint earlier about the code system.
Mm-hmm.
Picard's like, I think we have an opportunity here to end this.
Oh, yeah. You're going to end it all right. I mean, I don't know. Data should have been able to figure it out. Unless he figures, well, they're not going to kill themselves. Well, he must not know Starfleet officers very well. I mean, even Keiko, I would die to defend my child. Oh, to die is an honor of every Klingon.
Yes, it's kind of the guy that you least want to take along with you. You really want to take, you know, the cowards, right? You want to leave Picard, leave Keiko, leave anyone. Go for the young ensign who's just on the ship that's, you know, still hitting on, you know, Lieutenant Smith that he's got the hots for. You know, get someone who's actually going to sell his crew out for a couple more years.
Take the guy who's been quivering in the corner the whole time saying, I don't want to die, I don't want to die. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so.
Take the baby. I don't know why they didn't take the baby. I would have taken the baby. That's going to generate the most sympathy.
That's dark.
But does it matter? I mean, they're bad guys. They're going to kill everybody in this room anyway. What, are they going to leave the baby laying there by herself while they kill everyone else? Of course not. So if they're going to do something to stop us, they might think twice if the baby's here. Nope, take the baby. But I'm glad they didn't, because I'm looking forward to some many more Molly O'Brien episodes.
Oh, the many, many.
Many, many Molly O'Brien.
Actually, you know something? When my daughter was a baby, we got her one of her first babies was, we call her Baby Rose. And that was her voice. Kind of a whiny thing, and I got that off of Molly. But anyway. So, they're going to the cargo bay. Let's go, everyone. Let's off to the cargo bay. Worf, who got phasered twice, is taken. So is Keiko and Picard. And when they get there, that's when they finally come out with the truth. They're all condemned prisoners to this penal asteroid, or this penal moon. Maybe we should do that.
But have a penal colony on the moon?
I think that's a great idea. I mean, just recently there was a guy here in Nebraska that escaped from a prison transport. If they're not even on the planet, they can't cause any harm.
Wasn't this the same concept behind Alcatraz?
Yeah.
Out in the middle of the bay, how are they going to ever escape?
Yeah. I think we need to mop up the floors and send them back there. But anyway.
Now, how about we all just go to the moon and leave the criminals here?
But there's nothing on the moon for us law-abiding people.
We make the society the way we want it to be.
That's right. Well, that's true. So, but anyway, that's when Picard is able to play his hand, and I think these three prisoners gave up a little too easy still.
I mean, they did. They absolutely did. They look, without wanting to criticize the episode, they reach this end game and they basically say, oh, now Picard, we're going to tell you that we're actually evil after all, and it's not going to come as a surprise to you, and I'm sure you've already got a plan. And then when they do get like, you know, yeah, we've got a plan, we're going to blow the hatch because, you know, that's just how honorable we are. They basically go, oh no. And then they just leave the bodies and they head off into the bucket full of all of the...
Oh no.
It doesn't seem like it's that much of a threat, right?
We would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for them.
It's not that far away from that, in completely fair. It is quite Scooby-Doo-ish.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good analogy. I like that. Oh, you pesky kids! I mean, what's the worst threat she's got? You better hope you never come across us again, Picard.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, yeah, okay. That'll help you guys. All right, we'll put up the cone so nobody ever comes here again.
I would have told her that while they were sitting up there in the confinement. Yeah, don't worry, no one's ever going to see you again. But still, for them to give up, I wouldn't have given up. I'd rather be blown out into space and finally die. But nope. They say, okay, you win. We know when we're beat. And that's it. They go back home to plan their next escape in 200 to 400 years from now.
And remind me, did I miss the dialogue where they were able to say why the transporter's working perfectly all of a sudden?
Oh, that's a good point. What? Yeah.
They were able to beam everything up without the enhancers.
But the thing is, I don't think that. So here's the thing. I don't think they're like locking on to individuals or reading life signs. I think they're just almost like beaming up a bucket full of stuff from the atmosphere. So I consider this to be the equivalent of a, you know, if you consider yourself like in a boat, sending something down to pick up something from the seabed versus just sending a bucket down and whatever you can grab, you bring up. So that's how I usually read these things. Yeah. But no, you didn't miss the dialogue. And with O'Brien out, right? O'Brien's not what's it. Actually, talking about O'Brien, you know, my goodness, these guys are going to need therapy going forward, aren't they? I mean, you're about a year into the marriage. You've got a kid. Your husband, you know, even if he is kind of taken over, you know, he is kind of he's gone completely 180, and he's kind of holding a phaser to Keiko and the kid. I'm not convinced that Keiko was taken over by a power wraith. I think it's just her vengeance took her about 4 years for her to plan.
I liked her better when she was, though. No, I've said, a power wraith, when she was taken over, I liked her better there. I don't think she's such a bad character on TNG. I just think she becomes over whiny and, I don't like her in DS9. Except for the Paul Wraith one. So anyway, these guys are back on the planet. Everybody's been phasered, has been healed. And it's time to move on. But first, Miles wants to say if I could have killed that thing inside of me. Mm-mm. We know. We both do. No, we don't. That baby doesn't know anything. Even how to look like Molly.
Well, they focus right in on the baby, right at the closing. And I heard somebody else say, I don't remember who it was, but they said when they watched it, they thought maybe one of these entities is in the child. You know, and this is going to come back to bite them down the road somewhere.
Maybe it does, yeah. Yeah. Molly does get whiny, too, on occasion. Okay. We made it. Is there anything else we need to say? Hey, this may be one of the shorter shows. Anything else? Short. We're an hour and 15 minutes now.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's not much else as far as I can see.
I think we're done.
Yeah.
No, I can't think of anything else I was going to mention. That seems...
Okay. Well, then, let's go watch the Orville. It's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Want to end this one on a high note or a low note?
Are you tipping your hand to your, towards your score?
No, let's end on a high note, Lou. You go first.
Okay, so do you want it to go low, middle, high, or middle, low, high?
I think you should just go ahead and go.
But you don't have the information to be able to answer that question. You think you have the information, but you don't quite know.
Okay, I think I do. I don't think it's quite a one. It's not that bad. It's not new ground or hero worship or violations or even worse yet, it's not Shades of Grey. But it is pretty. I'd be comfortable giving this guy a 2.
Give Shades of Grey a 3?
Actually, I gave Shades of Grey a 1.
Okay.
You gave it a 2. And Cena gave it a 2.5. So, yeah, I don't know.
Hey, Shades of Grey had its strong points.
Yeah, the fact that it ended after 40 some minutes.
Yes, it did.
I don't really see much into this. There's too many cliches. They're able to take over this ship in a sense. They can stop the force fields. They can stop the stop transporters. Build force fields where they need them. I think there has to be a way that the bridge should be the main control of everything, and no matter what your level of security clearance is, the bridge should be able to override it. That's what I think. Unless the captain is going to be higher than the bridge. Somebody has to be able to stop somebody else. Who knows what that's going to be. But it is okay. I do like Brent Spiner in this. I love him and his interaction with Worf. But I don't think it could save much on this episode. So I'm stuck on a 2. So who thinks they're going to be higher than a 2?
Well, I'll get a crack at it.
Yeah, please do.
I didn't think this was a bad episode. It's one that, you know, if it's on, I'll watch it. It's not a strong episode, but it's definitely an entertaining episode if nothing else. It's obviously a bottle show, with the exception of, Planet Hell during the first act. So they're using their sets and they're using their regular stars, nothing special there. But, it did give the actors a chance to do something different and, do something more fun. Because you don't get, these guys, they're always playing the good guys. They don't get to play the sinister people that often. it does happen somewhat more regular than it probably should. But, and there is some drama there in terms of, who are these people really? What is their goal? What do they actually want? So, there's a little bit of, mystery to it. And, I remembered one of the other parts I'd mentioned after they had taken over 10 forward and they got control of the helm and they adjusted their course. Or, no, when they had requested where to go and Deanna had said, take us to the 80-degree south latitude line. And Riker leans over to the captain and says, that's the southern polar region. I expected Picard to lean over and go, yes, I know how latitude lines work.
Thank you, number one. I'd be lost.
Very astute. And I also wonder, if Picard had gone for, Troy's suggestion to go to the southern region, when they come out to the bridge, and Picard orders them to the southern region, and Riker would have been like, wow, Data was just talking about that, too. They would have just been like, huh, weird, and moved on. But it's not a strong episode, but it's not a weak episode either. I'd put it in middle of the road, and I'm going to give it a 3.
That's less than I thought. Okay, Doc, what about you?
So I also think this entire episode could have been ended with the oh look, there's a planet. Maybe the Essex crash landed there. Well, no one's going to be alive. Okay, see ya. You don't have any of this, any of these problems if you just ignore Troy's like feeling that there's something down there. And even when I never quite worked out, is what exactly were they going to find? What exactly were they? What's the best case scenario here? A whole like a new colony, or almost like it's Terra Nova, right? It's almost like a Terra Nova situation where these people have kind of grown out of the descendants of an old ship. I don't think that's a great position to be in, and it's not. It's probably not for now, right? They can come back and they can handle it when they don't need the flagship to be hanging around waiting. Poking around to see if there's anyone living in caves. Okay, I accept everything, all the criticisms of this episode. I completely accept them because that's like correct. It is not that great. It's very cliched. If we're going to start talking about the security flaws and the rest of it, yeah, sure. I mean, there you go. It is what it is. There's a lot of other stuff that goes on in Trek that we accept. And security flaws aren't particularly high up on the list of things that bug me. I always watch this episode whenever it's on, and it's also an episode that I will go to for like a comfort episode. You know, maybe not everyone has comfort episodes, but you know, when you want to watch a bit of Trek, you think, oh, what should I watch? What haven't I watched in a while? If Power Play is anywhere near, or if a lot of these like season 5 good shows are anywhere near, I'm very happy to put them on. I like the juxtaposition of Troy and Data, and also of O'Brien as well. So I like the fact that O'Brien's... I don't know if at this point people were thinking about taking him over as a regular over to DS9, but he does well in this show, and he's certainly... I mean, we have both O'Brien and Ro as guest stars, and I mean, Ro's practically invisible, and O'Brien's... you know, a good performer. I think it's good. I really do. I think that it's pretty well executed as well in terms of... I do remember thinking that there was a mystery here, and I don't know why these guys were acting strangely, and whether or not it was indeed just a ghost from an old Starfleet captain that had gone crazy. On this last rewatch, by the way, I started having Star Trek Beyond flashes when they were talking about the captain that got upset and went mad. So I was coming into this show for this recording with this being a solid nailed on 4. And I'm not convinced that I'm going to change my mind on that. I think 4 out of 5 is perfectly respectable, especially I go back to this episode so much and I just enjoy it. Put it down to the fact that I had a traumatic childhood, no doubt, and this happened to be on when I had to come home late from school one day and I needed a bit of Trek. I don't know. But I've always enjoyed this episode for what it is, and it's light and it's nonsense, and it's not the greatest episode in the world, but I always find it enjoyable.
Okay, 4 out of 5. I thought for sure you were going to say, and I think you've won me, Lou. It's a 3. But nope, guess not. Okay, so Matt, let's see when I have you on again. I have you for the Outcast.
Yes.
I'm having coming trouble. Right up. What is the Outcast? I don't remember that.
Genderless people.
Yeah, gender neutral people, and one of them falls in love with Riker.
Oh, I can't wait till we discuss that one.
Oh, it'll be a good one.
I don't have strong memories of this, and I don't have a strong opinion on it. It's always a bit vague at the moment. Let's look forward to that one. I don't have, not walking in with pre-existing opinions.
Okay. I'm going to give you a preview and something for you guys to chew on for the next 2 episodes, till we get to there. You know how I always say, sometimes I like Star Trek to take risks. Okay. What would have happened? Obviously, I think they're called the Genai, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Sounds about right.
they have no gender. Therefore, nobody's a man, nobody's a woman. However, some of them deviants think that they are one or the other. And obviously, to put Riker's love interest to be one of these people, you have to cast a female actor. I wish they had gone the other way and made it a man.
I think I remember hearing an interview where Jonathan Frakes was saying the same thing, that they wish they had casted a male actor for that role.
Yeah, I seem to recall the same.
I had never heard that, but I think somehow for Riker, I think I would have found it interesting. But again, he's going to have to kiss a man on screen. How's that going to go? Back in 1992, it wasn't. Mm. It just wasn't. No way.
Really? Is it really that different? I don't know what the kind of, you know, the censorship or the social kind of acceptability boundaries would have been, but I'm not sure that it would have been have been that different.
No, as I recall, there was a season 4 on Deep Space Nine Rejoined.
Mm-hmm.
Where they had the two females.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember that was really controversial at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're talking, 5 years from this, So, yeah, that would have been.
And I have to say that, I mean, you know, to be blunt, you know, females are a lot softer than male in kind of a lot of the social attitude lines. Well, I don't quite know why that is, but it does seem to be. It seemed to be the case, but no. I think it would have been interesting.
So that's a taste of what we'll get the next time.
Yeah,
that is a taste. Time. That is a taste next. Because you know I gave the host a 2, and James, so did you,
and so did I.
Yeah.
So what is the host supposed to do about it?
Well, I mean, again, that's what I was. I had a problem with it because of the fact that, you know, we're just used to these kind of changes.
Okay, so yeah. You knocked it down a couple of months due to lack of lesbian action. I remember.
Right. There we go. Yes. No, I just have a problem. I had a problem with that. I think they did it in Rejoined, but they only went so far. So wait till we get to DS9, Matt. Maybe we should get you on for that.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
After a devastating injury,
Worf will never regain the use of his legs.
A crippled warrior chooses suicide over life as an invalid.
I want you to help me die.
Can a medical miracle save him?
If he goes into that operation, he could come out a corpse.
Or will he die under the knife?
He's going into cardiac arrest.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
All right, so everyone, why don't you join us next time as we review episode number 16 for season 5, and that will be Ethics. And this time we'll have Colin on, who's really been itching to get on the show lately, hasn't he?
He has,
and he says, oh, he's not available at that time. Colin, if you hear this, which you shouldn't be hearing this before you record, don't worry. I will figure out a way to get you on.
That'll be a good one, too, because I remember when I was on for The Loss, and we had talked about how Ethics was essentially the same story, but told better.
Yeah, could be.
So yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing that one.
All right. Well, thanks again, Matt, and everyone take care and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Nighty night.